So tonight, I want to give a little brief introduction to the body, breath, and mind of Zazen. Zazen is what we call meditation in the Zen tradition. There's a way in which the word meditation refers to such a vast kind of body of things, so many different kinds of practices, that it in a certain way doesn't really refer to anything. And so in the Zen school, in the school of Zen Buddhism, we talk about Zazen, which is seated Zen meditation. There's also standing Zen and walking Zen, and there's bringing Zen practice into our everyday life and our encounters with our work, with our partners, with the sink full of dishes. All of these places are opportunities to practice Zen. Zazen is not about stilling the mind, quieting the mind, or emptying the mind. It's not about causing thoughts to cease, or dramatic and really beautiful states of mind to arise. Nor is it a pursuit of insights, whether insights, psychological or philosophical insights about yourself or the world, or great spiritual insights. All of those things can happen. They can arise during the course of Zazen. But in a really important way, they're side effects. And the practice that we're going to be learning tonight is something that is not dependent on circumstances, is not dependent on having your mind be a certain way, your body be a certain way, the circumstances of your life being a certain way. This is a practice that we can do exactly with the body, mind, life, and circumstances that we have right now. So I really invite people to come to come into their first encounter with Zazen with kind of a experimenter's mind, a empirical researcher's mind, to go out and see what actually is here, rather than going for exactly what it is that you may have had an idea that you're looking for. One great Zen teacher has said that you know, when we have something that we go out looking for, then one of two things happens. We find it or we don't. And either way, we miss out on the full scope of the rest of our lives. And so it's in this kind of spirit of empirical investigation, of seeing what is actually here, seeing what these tools of the Zen Buddhist tradition have to offer. You may decide that it's not for you. You may decide that you're looking for something with a different emphasis or a different set of tools, or this is not something that you're looking for at all. But I want to encourage you to, for tonight, at least till the end of our program, not make that decision yet. Just see what's here. I am going to talk about the body, breath, and mind of Zazen, and then I will give a brief overview of the program for tonight. I'll talk briefly about the practice of walking meditation, and I'll talk about the Zen practice of chanting that we'll also do tonight. So first, to start with, if we're going to be sitting on a cushion, the first thing to do is to move the cushion, which is called a zafu, to the back of the mat, which is called a zabuton. And then you want to sit on kind of the forward third of the cushion, so that what it does is tilt your pelvis downward and become a wedge, kind of supporting you, getting your knees solidly onto the floor. This is if the cross-legged postures are going to work for you. If they're not going to work for you, I'll show you some other postures as soon as I get through these. Then the next thing to do in the cross-legged posture is to unhook your ankles, lie them one in front of the other. And this is often the easiest cross-legged posture to get into. There also exists the more contortionist postures of the half lotus and the full lotus, and they really offer no incremental benefit unless you do an extraordinary amount of yoga and stretching and can sit in them naturally. But if you can't sit in those postures naturally, this is the best cross-legged posture to take. If cross-legged isn't going to work for you, then what you can do is you can turn your cushion sideways, turn it on its edge, and sit in a supported kneeling position with your the bottoms of your legs on either side of the cushion. So first thing, stand your cushion up, put it on its edge, yep, and then put it between your legs, and then lower your butt down onto it. And there's also, we have these benches called seiza benches. Seiza refers to the kneeling position, and you can put these just across your calves, and it may be comfortable, but try that if you want. And also, zazen can be done perfectly well sitting up in a chair, and I could give instructions for that too. And really, zazen can be done in traction in a hospital bed, which is why, in fact, it's fundamentally important. But part of the way, part of what we're doing with the details of the posture and is making everything as simple as possible, setting our body in a way that for this period we can be a little bit less concerned with the details and positionings of our body. And in order to help us arrive at that state of less concerned with the details, we begin by focusing on some of the details. So once we've got a comfortable base for the lower part of our body, then the next thing we want to do is bring attention to the spine. The spine is the most important part of the posture. And you can elongate the spine and straighten it out. And a straight spine actually has a curve in the lower back. So your belly comes forward a little bit, your hips are tilted forward, and you can imagine a string kind of coming up the top of your spine and the top of your head and kind of suspending you downward from it. Or you can imagine pushing upward on the ceiling with the crown of your head to hold that up and feel that length through your chest and upper body. And then to bring some attention to the shoulders and move them up, back, and down so that your chest opens up and the backs of your shoulder blades are kind of facing each other a little bit, opening up the chest and heart area. We tend to kind of protectively curl forward, and zazen is a practice of sitting with upright dignity, receiving and meeting all of life, all of the challenges, all of the beauty and joy, everything just as it is. And part of this posture is this dignified openness that we're creating. And then we bring our attention to the hands. There's two positions for the hands. One is to take your non-dominant hand and lay it on top of your dominant hand, overlapping at the level of the first knuckle there, and have your thumbs just pointing tip to tip with about as much pressure to hold two pieces of paper together. And this forms an oval in a single plane, so you want to avoid having your thumbs down like that, steepled like that, or collapsed like that. A single plane like that, and there's also another oval created by your arms there. And depending on a variety of dispositional and kind of biomechanical reasons, this position may feel very supported, or it may provoke a lot of tension in the shoulders. And if it does provoke tension in the shoulders, then another option is thumb and forefinger together, palms down, in a comfortable position somewhere on the top of your thighs in a way that neither pushes you forward nor pushes you back nor pulls you forward. And then, though as we're talking now, it's sensible to look at me, and then what we'll do during the period of meditation is do one of two things with our eyes. One is to look straight out and then let the eyelids kind of come to half-mast. Another is to fix your gaze around 6 or 8 feet in front of you on the floor and let your eyes go into soft focus around that. We sit with our eyes open in the Zen tradition, and part of what that does is really ground us specifically in this place, this room, and in the reality of this part of our lives. When we close our eyes, it's easier to get lost in kind of the inner television set, or it's easier to get lost in trying to pursue what we imagine is the goal of Zen meditation, relaxation, or peacefulness, or a feeling of compassion, or whatever it is that we may come looking for. And it's easier to kind of artificially and unusefully manufacture that for ourselves with our eyes closed. So the eyes open is a kind of grounding mechanism for that. And the eyes are often the last part of the posture to feel really natural. So if it feels peculiar to be sitting there with your eyes kind of half focused, that is everything on course, exactly as it should be. And so to just not get caught in too much concern over doing the right thing or trying to make it totally comfortable. And then we bring attention to the head, and then we will tuck the chin in slightly, and that kind of further lengthens the spine, kind of as if it's extending up the back of our head. And then, so this is the posture, this is the basic posture, the spine extended, curve in the lower back, chin tucked, eyes opened and lowered, holding up the ceiling, opening the chest. This is the basic posture that we will return to again and again when our attention wanders. And this posture is meant to be moderately comfortable. You will not find complete and total comfort, complete and total physical ease. And so part of what we are doing is entering into an experiment to see with what else we can discover when we're not pursuing tweaking the dials of our physical comfort. Because ultimately, minimally through sickness, old age, and the process of death, there will come a time when there is some amount of physical suffering that becomes inescapable. And this practice of Zazen, this practice of encountering our body, breath, and mind through these tools, gives us skill in wielding these tools in those more challenging circumstances. And I'll say more about this when we get to the mind of Zazen. And then we bring our attention to the breath. We breathe in and out through the nose, silently, not doing anything special with our breath, not trying to create a yogic ujjayi breath, not trying to breathe slow or deep or fast, not worrying if it's ragged or smooth, just bringing our attention to the breath as it actually is right now. And when we release some of the tension, when we open our shoulders, have our hips tilted downward like this, and release some of the tension in our upper chest, we find that the breath naturally kind of lowers into our belly. And so we do try to do breathe in and out in a belly breathing, diaphragmatic kind of way, rather than just breathing up and down from the top part of the lungs. But other than that, we make no effort to modify the breath. And even that isn't a modification as much as it is just getting out of the way and letting the breath fall to its natural equilibrium. And then bringing our attention to wherever the breath feels most vivid to us, whether it's in the mouth, at the base of the nose, in the throat, in the belly, whether it's the sound of the breathing, the physical response of the belly moving in and out, the taste of your breath, the sound, or any part of it. Whatever it is, wherever your attention alights most naturally in connection to the breath. In an important way, the breath is a arbitrary place to anchor our attention, but we use it in part Because it's always with us, always available, and because it's unique in being in just kind of straddling kind of both sides of being both potentially within the sphere of conscious control and functioning completely without any of our conscious oversight. And so that kind of makes it well suited for starting to look past dualities, for instance. And then in the Zen tradition, we begin with a basic structure of counting the breath. So breathing in, we count silently two. breathing in, we count silently one. Breathing out, we count silently two. In three, so on up to 10. When you get to 10, you start over at home. Doesn't matter if you get to 10. Doesn't actually matter if you get to 2. And it doesn't actually matter if you start on 2 or 7 or 12. But the value of this practice, the useful kind of movable skill is is what we do when we notice our mind is doing anything other than what we've intended to do, when our body is doing anything other than what we've intended to do. So when the mind moves, as it will, almost instantly, into evaluations or judgments or stories or thinking about what you're going to have for dinner or really being deeply sorry you came to this big mess of Zen at all. So whatever it is, whenever you notice that anything has arisen in your mind other than full attention on the breath and counting, to just acknowledge that, to unhook from your mind, from that storyline, that thought, and bring it back to the posture, back to the breath, back to one. And this is the fundamental practice of Zazen. Back to the posture, back to the breath, back to one. And we don't need to judge ourselves or criticize ourselves as we do this, although criticism may arise, and when we get caught up in that, we unhook, back to the breath, back to the posture, back to one. But one image for what this is like when you're trying to paper train a puppy. And so when you're trying to paper train a puppy to go on the paper, you put it on the paper and then it's going to scamper away because it's a puppy, and then you pull it back with gently and lovingly, and it's going to scamper away, and you pull it back until it does its business. And it's with this same spirit of gentleness, patience, and kindness towards ourselves that we bring our mind again back to the posture, back to the breath, and back to one. So, we do practice. So when, if you notice that your posture collapses, if you notice that you're leaning forward, your shoulders are hunched, or you're anything like that, if you notice that, do come back to this alignment that we started with. And so, but don't become overly concerned with it. And aside from coming back into that Zen posture alignment, we encourage you to practice stillness. And this is related to not trying to find that kind of mythical posture of perfect ease. And so it's possible that your legs may fall asleep. We sit for 25-minute periods. There is no physical or physiological harm that can come to you or your body by allowing your leg to be asleep for 25 minutes. We sometimes use the words, you know, pinch a nerve or circulation is cut off, but that actually isn't what's happening at all. And it's actually well within the realm of normal experience. So part of what happens for us when our body is uncomfortable, when our leg is falling asleep, when we have a itch on our nose that we have to scratch, is that we hear our mind saying, "You have to move. You have to fix that. It's a problem, and you need to deal with it right now." And then if we don't immediately do that, we see that it gets louder and louder and louder. And part of what the gift of Zazen is, and the gift particularly of the discipline of stillness in Zazen, is that if you wait out your own screaming mind just a little bit more, you see that that thing that seems like a universe filling imperative of you must move starts to peak in intensity, and then, as all things do, break up, pass away, and change. And when you see that, even once, when your mind says you have to move, there's a problem that you have to fix, and you don't do anything in response to that, then you start to free yourself from the shackles of your own mind. And part of what this practice does is train us in being able to do that, and to let us connect to a deeper peace, a deeper comfort, a deeper joy that is not about the mere state of our body, mind, or lives. And so whatever arises in the mind, we treat the same way. We just notice that we've gotten our attention captured from it. We unhook. We bring ourselves back to the posture, back to the breath, back to one. There's not one good set of experiences that we hold on to and another one that we unhook from. We unhook from everything, coming back to the practice of sitting and counting over and over again. And so it doesn't matter how long you stay focused, and it doesn't matter how deeply you're concentrating. The power of Zazen, the useful skill, comes in this noticing what's arisen, unhooking, and taking choiceful action. And this is the skill that we're going to carry into the rest of our lives. And so in a way, Zazen on the cushion in the Zendo with the community is the stripped down, most simplified place that we can possibly practice this subtle skill. And we practice it in this simplified version so that we can take it out into our lives and use it in the crucible and complexities of work, love, family, sickness, old age, and death. And so then in our lives, when anger arises or fear arises, rather than just acting angrily or just recoiling in fear, we can recognize, fear is here. And notice that fear has arisen. Notice that anger has arisen. And start to have a moment of choice in which we can ask ourselves, who do I mean to be? In which we can make a choiceful action. So what is useful in this moment, in this circumstance? What's skillful? What's kind? And Zazen is all about starting to help us first notice those moments and then start to have a little bit more spaciousness in them in which we can choose and really be the person we mean to be. And that's what this whole endeavor is. And all of this comes from the simple discipline of sitting still and counting your breath. That practice, the counting the breath, is building up a structure, kind of a scaffolding along the outside. And there will come a time in Zen practice when we start to dismantle that that scaffolding piece by piece and start to see what else we can discover. But all of it requires this foundation of noticing where our mind is and bringing it back again and again and again. So, that is a brief introduction to the basic practice.